I apologize. I've been on mute, and I thought I was talking the whole time. So we are ready to start our Fan for Racing radio show here tonight for Bristol's NASCAR weekend preview and our Hot Topic sound off. Joining us today is our co-host, Brian Eberle. Welcome to the show, Brian.
Hey, Sharon. Happy Thursday. How you doing?
Well, considering I was talking for a little while here on mute, not so good, but We'll work on getting better here as the show goes on. We're going to start with some short track news, a little bit about the upcoming races in the short track and dirt world. And then afterward, we're going to briefly update the upcoming races for the ARCA Menards, the ARCA East, and the ARCA West series. None of them are racing this weekend, but we do have a little bit of good news on that front as well, and we'll share that with you. Then I've got a little episode here. It's up at NASCAR.com if you want to watch the video, but we'll talk a little bit about how the inside and outside lanes can change a lap at Bristol with some NASCAR audio that features Larry McReynolds and Todd Gordon. And then after that, Brian and I will give a few of our comments about that as well. I think that's going to be a little bit helpful for fans that may not know some of this information, or newer fans to the sport that don't understand just how tricky those lanes can be at Bristol Motor Speedway, Brian.
Yeah, I'm super excited that we have an asphalt Bristol Motor Speedway in the spring. So excited for that. So really looking forward to this weekend's races. I love the trucks and glad to see Cup back on the asphalt as well. So should be a fun weekend. It looks like there's very little rain in the forecast for Bristol, so hopefully things will go off as scheduled.
Absolutely. Also, the Xfinity Series, as you may have noticed from Brian's comments, they're not racing this weekend, so we'll make sure that you have a few notes there, as well as what's coming up with the next race, when their next race is. Then we'll preview the NASCAR Truck and the Cup Series races that are taking place at Bristol Motor Speedway. And as always, we end our episode with the Hot Topic sound off discussion from the Fan for Racing crew. Not sure we know, it might be just you and I, Brian. It sounds like Mike and Andy are both not available. And I'm pretty sure Tommy's not going to be available. He works during the day. We might have Jay drop in for a few minutes, but it's going to be pretty much you and I this episode.
Sounds good. I think I'm ready.
Okay. All right. So let's go ahead and get started with some Hot Topic conversation here. Let me get to my page. I've got some notes up at the team's page, Brian, if you want to go ahead and get started with some of the stuff that's happening on dirt.
Yeah, just a second here. Grab that.
Okay, well, I can go ahead and get started. On dirt, there's been some failed tire tests that have been taking place tied to the February 16th race at Volusia Speedway Park, and that's led to a suspension fine for Bobby Pierce. And you can read about it over at the World of Outlaws, but there's also some more information over at Flow Racing. And there's actually been two drivers that were fined, and you can read about that over at Flow Racing as well. They've got some in the dirt kart racing world. That's been a kind of a big issue and a big hot topic, I guess, in the dirt world.
Yeah, definitely had Twitter lit up there when that news kind of all broke, for sure. Definitely hate to see that, hate to see kind of the rules violations and things like that, but I guess it is what it is. You know, you got to try to keep a level playing field as much as you can, and we'll move on and move forward.
Exactly. Do you want to move on to the short tracks then?
Yeah, that sounds good. So, yeah, we got pretty good cars tour late model race last weekend over at Southern National Motorsports Park. Obviously, always great coverage, short track scene, and Matt Weaver there with a great breakdown up on his website and some, a really good finish there. I think a good race, and really looking forward to what the car series is going to do across the country this year.
Okay. Also over at Short Track Scene, there's the legend standout, Connor Waddell. He's moving up at Dominion Raceway, and it's going to be a lot of fun for fans that attend that track to watch what he does this season. And then there's the Anderson Speedway. The O'Reilly Auto Parts 100 features a 4K to win, and you can read all about that over at Racing America as well. You can read about Connor Waddell over at Short Track Scene. But there's a couple of really big races that are happening this weekend.
Right? Yeah, I've got a couple of races both coming up on Racing America. Two major super late model events coming up this weekend. UARA National Series Rattler 250 at South Alabama Speedway, as well as the Pro All-Star Series Easter Bunny 150 at Hickory Motor Speedway. Fortunately, I've not been to either of those tracks, but I've heard so many great things, especially about Hickory, and would love to get out there at some point. But both of those are going on this weekend with coverage on Racing America TV. You've got 30 super late model teams entered for the Rattler 250 and 31 teams for the Baby Rattler on Saturday, March 16th. Bubba Pollard won this event last year, but will go up obviously against some of the other big guns that you hear across super late model racing, Steven Nassi, Augie Grill, Jeremy Doss, Jacob Gomes, and many more if he wants to go to victory lane again on Sunday in the Rattler 250.
Yeah, it's really fun because that Rattler 250 is actually, you guys will remember last year, the SRL National Series, they've rebranded their name to the URAL, or the, is it UARA, I'm sorry. It's now rebranded as the UARA National Series. So they're getting their season started with this Rattler 250, and I think it's going to be a lot of fun to watch. Just a couple of shout-outs here. I always like to shout-out our Illinois drivers, Brian. Jeremy Miller from Rockford, Illinois, is going to be in that race, and I'm super excited to see him on the entry list there.
Yeah, rest in peace, Rockford Speedway. Going to miss that track for sure. Always a fun time up there. Been up there several times as I was younger and a few times in my more adult years as well. But great little track, and, you know, like you said, always love to shout-out those Illinois drivers as they race anywhere across the country.
And another Illinois driver that's going to be participating in the 49th Hardee's Rattler 250 is, let's see, I just had it, from Roscoe, Illinois. Austin Mason is going to be in the other event. Jeremy Miller is going to be in the Grasshopper Baby Rattler. Austin Mason is going to be in the Rattler 250. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah, for sure. And Austin Mason, covered him a few times in some of the Midwest tour stuff he's run around here. So good dude, and looking forward to see what he can do this weekend.
Absolutely. Now, again, if you want to catch up on some of the other news that's happening in the short track and dirt track racing world, there is a lot of news over at Racing America, Short Track Scene, and Flow Racing. They always have great information. And we've even got a link here if you want to know more about the Cars Lake Tour and some at Southern National Motorsports Park. Front Stretch has some coverage that you can check out there as well. But what about this iRacing thing? Have you checked out the iRacing, the new program that came out for them?
I have not. I've actually never iRaced. Well, I mean, I've iRaced a few times at a friend's place or when they have them at racetracks and things like that. It's kind of been on my list of things I want to get into for quite some time now, and I just haven't quite pulled the trigger because when I go into something, I want to go all in, so I want to get the nice, probably a little bit more expensive setup end of things, but
right.
It is something that I think, I feel like the summers get so busy, but I think at a minimum by next winter, I definitely want to spend some time getting into iRacing a little bit more. And it's just been fun. I think just doing that when I came for the Chicago Street Course, I got to do that a few times, head into that. It really just kind of drives home how damn difficult it really is, especially on the street and road courses. So looking forward to giving it a try here, hopefully in the next handful of months.
Well, I'll tell you, this new edition has really gotten a lot of heavy praise from real world and sim racers alike. There's been rave reviews coming in, and they surpassed 250,000 active users for the very first time. And there's a YouTube video featuring the fact that they have the weather system in their latest release. So a lot of these cars that are on that program can race in the rain, which I think is a really cool feature that they've added with this new release. And I know our friend, remember we've had James as part of a Fan for Racing crew for a little while. He's in the past, he's helped me co-host some of the shows and stuff here on Fan for Racing. He's big into the iRacing world right now and doing a lot of stuff. I suspect that's why it's hard to get a hold of him these days. But, yeah, this is really cool that they've done this for the iRacing release.
And it's so incredibly realistic, too, from, you know, everything. I can only imagine how great the rain is and how great that feels. But, yeah, I've seen several comments from some of the iRacers as well as just some other drivers that have given it a chance over this last week when it came out or was released, and had a lot of positive feedback and a lot of energy generated around it for sure.
All right. Let's move over to the ARCA Menards series, and you might want to cover this next one. They've had some good news after the Phoenix race, and that was televised over on Fox Sports 1. You want to share the good news there, Brian?
Yeah, I think and kind of following a theme of some very positive news for motorsports and ratings this year. The ARCA ratings for Phoenix were up 8% over the last time this race was shown on FS1, which that was back in 2020, but 8% is pretty good. I think it's fairly consistent with what they saw for an increase at the cup level this week. I believe ratings were up 9% there. So I think, you know, a very good positive trend early on for ARCA. And the last couple of years, this race, Phoenix was relegated over to FS2, so obviously doesn't quite get the ratings there on FS2 as it does when it's on the little bit bigger station with FS1. But some good news for ARCA. Unfortunately, they've got like, you know, like 6 weeks until they race again at Talladega, so got a little bit of downtime in the early season. Always kind of hate that early gap in the schedule. It feels like it's really hard for their momentum to get going until you hit April and May, but definitely some positive ratings news. Unfortunate that race got cut about, I think it was 30-some laps short due to rain out at Phoenix, which is kind of crazy. It's raining at Phoenix. Just bring stock cars somewhere and it will rain. But, you know, didn't affect the ratings number, obviously still up 8%. So I think that's some good positive news. And got to make, you know, ARCA officials, sponsors, everyone happy to kind of see that early on in the season.
Yes, I think that's fantastic. Also, just to let you know, the ARCA Menards platform does not have any races going on this weekend. In fact, it's going to be a little bit of time, as Brian alluded to, for the ARCA Menards series. Their next race isn't until April 20th at Talladega, as he referenced. The General Tire 200 will be televised on Fox Sports 1. And, of course, we will preview it over here at Fan for Racing Radio the Thursday before. So stay tuned for that sometime in April. Now, the ARCA Menards Series East and West, though, they have a couple of races that are coming up. The Pensacola 150 for the ARCA Menards Series East will be their season opener. I'm really anxious to see how that goes. That race will be March 23rd, so next weekend, at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time over at Five Flags Speedway. And that will be available via live streaming over at Flow Racing and then ARCA Menards Race. The ARCARacing.com website usually has radio coverage available as well. So really cool to see the ARCA Menards getting their race, their season finally started. And then the second race for the ARCA Menards Series West will be the West Coast Stock Car Hall of Fame 150 presented by Napa Auto Parts, and that will be on March 30th, the following weekend, 10 p.m. Eastern time, because they're out there on the West Coast at Irwindale Speedway for that race, and that will be available via live streaming on Flow Racing with the radio coverage over at Racing America. So I'm kind of anxious for this ARCA East and the next race for the ARCA West as well, Brian.
Yeah, good to get them both going on some great classic short tracks, if you will. And, you know, I think pretty excited to see, and hopefully the trends and the positivity kind of around ARCA with the larger entry list and some positive rating news is going to continue throughout the course of the season.
Okay. Now, next up, I do have a NASCAR Inside the Race presented by Consumer Cellular. It's available over at NASCAR.com under their video section. But I watched this morning. I thought this would be really interesting to talk about this on our show today. And so I put it on our agenda. NASCAR on Fox's Larry McReynolds and MRN's Todd Gordon discuss how racing the inside versus the outside can shake up a driver's lap at Bristol Motor Speedway. I think I've got it all queued up here, and there might be a couple places where you're going to hear me talk over the video just to give you an idea of where they're talking about, because they say over here, and you can't really see where they're talking about. So I'm going to kind of voice over and just kind of let you know where that's at. So let's go ahead and listen to this, and then, Brian, you and I can comment on it afterward, okay?
Sounds great. Look forward to it.
Okay.
You've got the back pit road right here, and you've got a front pit road. But it's handled different, whether it's under green or under caution. Now, under green, if you're pitting on the backstretch, you can come off the racetrack, you can go down pit road into your pit box, and you can leave over in turn three.
So they enter on turn
two. Depending on the front stretch, you can come off the racetrack, go straight down pit road, go into your pit box, and then leave and go right back out on the racetrack in turn one. But not the case under caution. Under caution, we have to run all of pit road. So you'll come off of turn one, you'll enter pit road here into turn two, you'll come down even if you're in this pit box in the backstretch. But then you've got to stay on the black in the pit road area where they have timing lines all the way around and all the way down front stretch exiting at turn one. Pit road speed is a big key, 30 miles per hour. And it never fails because of this area right here.
That's turn three and four.
Drivers, they don't hit their pit road lights like they need to, and we get busted for speeding, and a lot of times it's those sections right there on the apron in turns three and four. This section here where it transitions around the corner, you actually
turn three.
You're going to go out here and run the radius. And as a crew chief who's been through this, if you run right out here on the outside, you set your lights up on the dash to run almost 5 miles an hour faster.
Yeah.
Because pit road speed is calculated at the inside wall of pit road. So the consistent speed around this corner, if you want to run a consistent speed, if you could come in here and hug this wall, that's going to be
between turns three and four.
To your point, these sections, the transition back to the straightaways and leaving, that's where the big transition happens. And then the other caveat about your green flag piece that we started with is if you pick a pit stall on the front stretch, your driver has to be mentally aware if he has to come under green, and usually if he has to come under green, it's because something's happened, that he doesn't enter pit road where he normally does. He enters off of turn four. That's one I've seen guys miss. Some of the best in the business, champions of the sport, not do it in the proper way. And if you don't do it, it's a huge time penalty. So it'll be interesting to see how this plays out if we get to any green flag cycle.
All right. The big thing in that video is that there's timing lines, Brian, right as you enter turn three on pit road, and there's timing lines as you enter turn four on pit road. So that's where a lot of the guys get caught with their speeding penalties. And the whole idea is that you enter pit road very differently under caution than you do if you're under green flag conditions, and it really it can be a big penalty for drivers if they miss their cue on which way they're supposed to enter pit road.
Yeah, definitely. I think if I was a driver, I would A, probably get on the pit road the wrong way to begin with, and B, probably definitely speed. So definitely an additional challenge compared to, you know, pitting at the bigger mile and a half track. So something to keep an eye on this weekend. I'm sure we will definitely see some pit road speeding penalties. I don't see how we won't. And probably somebody that's a contender will ruin their day speeding, getting on and or off pit road at Bristol.
That's right. And you know, on traditional tracks, you mentioned the 1.5-mile tracks, those speeding penalty timelines are usually – pit road's always on the front stretch, right, typically. And there's segments where they have timing timing loops or whatever that will catch drivers if they speed. Scoring loops, yeah. They'll catch drivers if they're speeding on pit road, and they end up getting penalties. And when you – that's the way it is on most of the track that they race. So when you go to a short track like Bristol and you have to enter pit road differently based on whether it's a green flag stop or a caution stop, it can really trip up the drivers, and they get anxious. And those turn three and turn four scoring timing strips can really catch them off guard because they're not used to having those in those areas, and that's why they get those timing, those penalties for speeding on pit road. And usually we see more at Bristol than we do at a lot of other tracks.
Yeah, agreed. It's definitely a challenge and something to keep an eye on for sure this weekend.
All right. I know we're a little bit ahead here, but let's go ahead and get started. We're going to start this time. Usually we start with the truck series, but I think what we're going to do is we're going to start with the series that's not racing this weekend, and that's the Xfinity series, and kind of cover some notes there. Their next race is the Focus Health 250 at Circuit of the Americas, which will be next weekend, Saturday, March the 23rd at 5 p.m. Eastern time. And, of course, we'll cover that next Thursday when we come back here next Thursday. But we do have a couple of notes here for the Xfinity series that Brian and I can cover. You want to start with Chandler Smith, kind of a review of what happened last week?
Yeah, sure. So after last week's race, Chandler Smith became the points leader for the first time in his career. Was able to kind of take advantage when Sharon, I'm sure you share in this, Justin Allgaier, Illinois driver. Mm-hmm. So we both like to follow his career and have followed his career for a long time. But a vicious late race crash with a flat tire took away what looked like a sure win for him at Phoenix Raceway. But that did hand the opportunity for Chandler Smith to pounce and get that first W for himself. And also propel himself into the Xfinity Series points lead for the first time in his career, just a point up over Austin Hill. Smith also joins Hill as the first two drivers to earn a spot in the Xfinity Series playoffs by the virtue of their wins. And although Allgaier's misfortune helped Smith find victory lane, his win isn't just pure luck. I mean, he came into the weekend with a very fast qualifying lap, started P2, won the first stage and led a race-high 88 laps. So definitely not a fluke win for Chandler. He had a great car as well, but hate to see that for Justin in the very, very late going to have that flat tire and take away what was a pretty sure win for him as well. He had a strong car, but I definitely think he'll get one later on this year and lock himself into the playoffs as well. Smith kind of gets an off week this week, obviously, with Xfinity being on a break. We'll head to COTA next weekend. That'll be his track debut at COTA. He made his track debut at COTA last year, where he finished started 27th and ended up finishing 12th.
Okay, so it's going to be fun to see what Chandler Smith does this week, and see what Justin Allgaier does. Hopefully, he'll come back, but he's going to have some competition there for sure. Next up. As Brian mentioned, we're going to the Lone Star State for the Circuit of the Americas. We'll preview that more in depth next weekend. But the Xfinity Series has only raced Dakota three different times. They have two different race winners. Kyle Busch won there in 2021. And then A.J. Allmendinger won in 22 and again in 23. So he's definitely going to be one of the ones to watch this weekend. There's also been three different pole winners in the three races that they've had there. They include Kyle Busch in 21. Ty Gibbs won the pole there in 22. And then, of course, A.J. Allmendinger, who's so strong on the road courses, won that pole in 23 just last year. Now, two of the three races have actually been won from the pole, with Kyle Busch doing it in 21. And in the 23 race, it was A.J. Allmendinger. He is the king of road courses, no doubt, and has been known as that for quite some time. Not only does he have the most wins of any driver on road courses in the series, but he also holds many records at Circuit of the Americas as well. A.J. Allmendinger is the king for the race record at 75.263 miles per hour, also the qualifying record at 92.173 miles per hour. With his two wins, nobody else has more. He has three top fives there, three top tens, and he's led 58 laps there. So the Xfinity Series drivers will kick off their race at the Circuit of the Americas with practice on Friday, March the 22nd, starting at 5:30, followed by pole qualifying at 6 p.m. So it's going to be fun to watch A.J. Allmendinger and the rest of the drivers out at Circuit of the Americas next week.
Yeah, for sure. And as you mentioned with those stats, AJ is obviously really looking forward to getting down to Texas next weekend and taking on Coda in the Xfinity Series. But he won't just be sitting home on his couch this weekend. Allmendinger's heading to Bristol, driving that number 16 Colic Racing Chevrolet in Sunday's Cup race at Bristol. It'll be the 42-year-old driver's second Cup Series start this year. He raced in the season opening Daytona 500, where he finished sixth. But when it comes to Bristol and the Cup Series, he's been there 23 times with just two top 10 finishes. Those came in 2016 and 2022. So looking for a better result there, I think, for AJ this weekend. But as we mentioned, he'll definitely be looking forward to getting back in that Xfinity Series car next Saturday at Coda.
Yes, indeed. And we had some really good news this week as well from Junior Motorsports. Connor Zillisch, who won this year's Rolex 24 at Daytona, is going to make a NASCAR Xfinity Series debut at Watkins Glen International for Junior Motorsports. And he'll be piloting that number 88 Chevrolet for his debut at Watkins Glen. And then he'll race three more races with Junior Motorsports at Kansas Speedway, Homestead Miami Speedway, and Phoenix Raceway. So that first race, of course, is the road course. The next two races are going to be 1.5-mile tracks, and then Phoenix Raceway we know is a short track, a fast short track. So pretty cool to see that happening for Connor Zillisch. He comes from Mooresville, North Carolina. He's just 17 years old, and he's won multiple national karting championships. He set track records at six different venues in his first year in the Sports Car Club of America in 2021, and he made the ARCA Menards Series debut in last year when he started on the front row in the number 28 Chevrolet at Watkins Glen. He finished runner-up on August 18th. Zillisch also signed a multi-year agreement with Trackhouse Racing in January as a development driver for that organization. So pretty cool to see Connor Zillisch making his entree into the NASCAR world.
Yeah, it seems like there's just a ton of excitement around this kid, obviously signing with Trackhouse. Just, you know, he's got a great road course background. Justin Marks has done a lot of road course racing in his days. So able to kind of find him, sign him, and then get him in a Junior Motorsports car this year to run four races once he turns 18 later this year. So I think it will be really great to see what he can do when he gets that shot behind the stock car on some of these ovals and stuff coming up this season with Junior Motorsports. And really no better team to be with in the Xfinity Series than either Junior Motorsports or JGR. So I feel like he's in one of the top rides, and we'll have, you know, obviously some of the best support from people in and around the industry. So I think kind of related to that, we'll probably see him vying for those Xfinity Series Sunoco Rookie of the Year standings next year potentially. And after four races this year, we've got RCR's Jesse Love leading the Sunoco Rookie of the Year standings over Colleagues Racing Shane Van Gisbergen in second. Young Motorsports' Leland Honeyman is in third. And all four rookie drivers, the fourth one being Dawson Cram, will be making their series track debuts next weekend at COTA. So their first times to those tracks, and we'll see. Obviously, Shane's probably got a leg up there on the other three, given his supercars background and his win on the Chicago Street Course and the Cup Series last season. But looking forward to see what those rookie drivers can do when they head to COTA.
Yeah, I'm super excited to see what Shane Van Gisbergen does out of COTA. In fact, I'm going to be in Texas that weekend, but my son is introducing his second book. His launch party is on Tuesday, and we've been super, super busy trying to promote his book. And so I'm not going to be able to get out there to the track, but I am going to be in Texas, so I am going to be watching the race, even though it might be from a little bit of a distance. So definitely looking forward to those races coming up. All right, the Xfinity Series does have a few milestones coming up as well. Talking about my son's milestone, the drivers have a lot of milestones coming up here too. So Shane Creed is going to be making his 75th NASCAR Xfinity Series start at the Circuit of Americas. Gosh, it's hard to believe that, isn't it? It happens so fast. Brandon Jones is making his 275th career start in the Xfinity Series at Richmond Raceway, and Cole Custer is making his 150th NASCAR career's Xfinity Series start at Martinsville Speedway. Those two races coming up later on in the schedule, but Sheldon Creed's going to be hitting his milestone next weekend. So congratulations to all of those drivers for those upcoming milestones.
And I feel like it was just yesterday that Creed was running around in the ARCA Series for MDM Motorsports. So definitely makes me feel a little bit old. Now he's already 75 races in. So.
Absolutely. And the Truck Series as well. He had a nice career in the Truck Series as well. Speaking of the Truck Series, they do have a race that's coming up this weekend. Excuse me. The NASCAR Craftsman Truck Series will be racing the WeatherGuard truck race at Bristol Motor Speedway. Those guys always put on a good show. Saturday, March the 16th, that will be at 8 p.m. Eastern time, so a nighttime race over at Fox Sports 1. They'll start the pre-race coverage at 7 p.m. with radio coverage on MRN and SiriusXM NASCAR radio. They're going to race 250 laps to cover a distance of 133.25 miles. First stage ends on lap 65. Next stage is going to end on lap 130. That's the second stage, and the final stage actually on the last lap, 250. So what do we have here for the Truck Series preview?
Yeah, so we've
Bristol.
Got what's up?
I said it's Bristol, baby.
Heck yeah. And so it'll be Bristol on the concrete for the first time for the trucks. They've been on the dirt since spring of 2021. This will actually be the first time they've competed on concrete since 1999 in a race won by Jack Sprague driving the number 24 for Hendrick Motorsports. So kind of crazy to think that it's been that long since the trucks have raced on concrete at Bristol in the spring. So pretty excited about that. There have been 26 Truck Series races at Bristol with 21 different winners, 19 different pole winners. Six of those races have been won from the pole. Brad Keselowski holds the race record set back in August of 2014. One Mr. Kyle Busch, who is in the field this weekend in the Truck Series, holds the qualifying record set back in August of 2017. Series veteran Matt Crafton, no surprise, has the most races at Bristol with 21. Kyle Busch holds the record for pretty much everything else with most polls, 4, most wins, 5, most top 5s, 7. Crafton does have the most top 10s of 14, although I feel that's driven by the fact that he's run 21 races. And the most laps led, here's a name we never really hear anymore, Mike Skinner with 562. Corey Heim, could be Heim time again on Saturday night. He was the most recent winner, past Christian Eckes there late in the fall to get the victory on the concrete. And as I already mentioned, there's two Cup Series drivers actually in the field this weekend. That's Kyle Busch in the number 7 Spire Motorsports Chevrolet, and then Cup Series rookie Zane Smith driving the number 91 for MHR Racing this weekend. So, and obviously Zane's had a very great Truck Series career as well. So I'd say going in early, those Busch, Smith, and Heim are probably our favorites, and we'll kind of get to talking and breaking that down a little bit. But we also have some former winners in the field, and we'll let Sharon touch on those three drivers.
Yeah, we've got three former winners that are going to be in the field, and they want to make another trip to Victory Lane this weekend in this race, all three of them. Let's start with Kyle Busch. Kyle Busch always wants to be in Victory Lane. He's the winningest driver in the Truck Series, and he's going to run his second race on his Select Tour behind the wheel of the number 7 Spire Motorsports Chevrolet this weekend. He's got 11 starts at this half-mile track. He's posted 5 wins in 8, 9, 10, 13, and 17, 4 poles, 7 top 5s, 8 top 10s, and he's led 544 laps. So Kyle Busch is going to be a strong contender again, I think, this weekend. But a couple of other strong contenders here, and always strong contenders when it comes to the Truck Series, are a couple of the regulars. With Ty Majeski, he's got 2 starts at the track in the number 98 ThorSport Racing Ford. He's posted 1 win there in 22. He has also the 1 top 5, 1 top 10, and he's led 45 laps. At 29 years old, his win in 22 was the first in his series career in the Truck Series. And then there's Corey Heim. He's the driver of that number 11 Tricon Garage Toyota. He's made 2 starts as well at the concrete track. And in those 2 starts, Heim has posted his win last year at the track. He's got 1 top 5, 2 top 10 finishes. And at just 21 years old this weekend, he would be the first driver to post back-to-back wins at Bristol since Kyle Busch did it back in 2010. So those are definitely drivers to watch this weekend, to be the drivers to have repeat wins at that track. But we've got an up-and-coming new driver to keep your eye on this weekend, too.
Yeah, and speaking of back-to-back potential, Roger Carruth will be looking to go back-to-back in back-to-back races, winning most recently at Las Vegas Motor Speedway, and will look to win again in the next Truck Series race coming up at Bristol. Touched on this before, but at just 21 years old, he's the 3rd African-American to win a NASCAR National Series race, joining Wendell Scott and Bubba Wallace. And his victory was part of just a string of recent wins from graduates of the NASCAR Drive for Diversity program that have won so far this season. Nick Sanchez won the season opener in the Truck Series with Rev Racing at Daytona. Daniel Suarez went to Victory Lane with Trackhouse Racing in Atlanta's Cup Race. As we mentioned, Carruth won at Vegas in the trucks. And I often forget this, but Kyle Larson is also a graduate of the diversity program back in the day, I feel like now. But he won the Cup Series race, obviously, last weekend at Vegas. 3 starts this season for Carruth. He's got that win, 3 top 10 finishes. Currently sits 4th in the point series standings. And he did run last year at Bristol where he finished 6th. So looking to win again this weekend, he'd become the 6th different driver in Truck Series history to win their first 2 races back-to-back. And there's pretty great listing of names here of drivers that have done it from throughout Truck Series history. It's Rich Bickle, who did it back in 1997 at Portland and Evergreen. Kurt Busch, who did it back in 2000 at Milwaukee and New Hampshire. Love Milwaukee, glad the trucks are back there. Ted Musgrave in 2001 at Homestead, Miami, and Mesa Marin. God, that's another track I miss. Todd Bodine did it in 2004 at Fontana in Texas. Casey Kane did it in 2004 at Darlington and Homestead, Miami. Kyle Busch did it in 2005 at Charlotte and Dover. and most recently Johnny Benson Jr. in 2006 at Michigan, and once again the Milwaukee Mile. So Caruth kind of looking to join some rare company throughout Truck Series history if he were to be able to win and go back-to-back this weekend.
Yes, indeed. I've kind of mentioned this before, but I would not have picked Tyler Ankrum to be leading the points, but so far he's been leading those points, but he's got some competition catching up. He's Ty Majeski is closing that gap, if you will. So he's extended his lead in the Craftsman Point Series at Las Vegas to 5 points over Ty Majeski, who sits in second. Now, Ankrum drives the number 18 for McAnally Hilgeman Racing in a Chevrolet. He left Las Vegas. I'm sorry. Do I have that wrong? No. He left off Las Vegas with a second-place finish, and he accumulated 42 points. And so that helped him retain his points standings lead with the best finish at Las Vegas in 8 starts at that track. He hails from San Bernardino, California, and he's made 5 starts at Bristol Motor Speedway. His first venture there was in 2019 when he netted a 20th place finish. And when he returned in 2020, Ankrum scored his track best 7th place finish there. Last year, Ankrum finished 23rd. He led 53 laps at that short track. But sitting in the rearview mirror is Thor Sport Racing's Ty Majeski. He's the driver of the number 98 Thor Sport Racing Ford. He led a race high of 134 laps and swept both stages at Las Vegas. But a speeding penalty caught him on pit road on lap 102, and that cost him a chance to win that race at Vegas. Now he heads to Bristol Motor Speedway. Majeski is hoping for another solid run to close that gap on Ankrum. In 2 starts at the fast track, Majeski has 1 win there, as we mentioned earlier, and that came in 2022. So we've got a few et cetera notes here for the Craftsman Truck Series as well, with some more news about the series.
Yeah, we had another driver that announced this week that's going to be making his debut, Brendan Butterbean Queen, who made a big name for himself last year in the Cars Tour, having a breakout season there. He's going to signed a deal to drive at North Wilkesboro in the number 1 Tricon Mobile 1 Toyota. So great deal there, great equipment, really cool to see for Brendan. He's out of Chesapeake, Virginia. He had, as I mentioned, that breakout campaign in 2023. Went to victory lane 4 times, had 13 top fives, finished 2nd in the point series standings. Really great season for him. And, you know, his quote in his release was, he's been dreaming of this since he started racing go-karts at 6 years old and really looking to put his name on the map. A great chance to go to North Wilkesboro, great short track and quality equipment in that number 1 Mobile 1 Toyota with Tricon. So look forward to that coming up in May at North Wilkesboro for Brendan Butterbean Queen.
Okay. Everybody's familiar with the NASCAR Craftsman Truck Series, but CRC is going to extend their entitlement of that series at Pocono Raceway and will open their weekend with a triple header weekend, July 12th to the 14th, the longest scheduled Craftsman Truck Series race ever to run at that venue. CRC Breckling 175 will consist of 80 laps, 175 miles on Pocono, which is a 2.5-mile trioval, the tricky triangle, we call it. That's an increase of 10 laps and 25 miles from the most recent races at Pocono. In addition, the CRC Breckling 175 becomes the longest Craftsman Truck Series race at Pocono Raceway. It'll also be the first ever contested on a Friday evening at the Turkey Triangle. In the previous 14 races won, 12 were on Saturday and 2 were on Sunday in 2011 and 2020. So they're really looking forward to showcasing their Pennsylvania roots at their home state with the home state company residing there. And I think it's going to be fun to watch a little bit extra time for that race in the truck series.
Yeah, for sure. That's awesome. Love to see it. We've got some upcoming milestones for drivers in the Craftsman Truck Series, and a real big one coming up at Martinsville Speedway. Matt Crafton will make his 550th career start. All of those have been consecutive. I don't know how many seasons that is, but that's got to be, what, 15-plus seasons? Crazy
yeah.
to see Crafton, you know, kind of what the Truck Series used to be, several grizzled veterans like that that were mainstays in the Truck Series back in the day. So Crafton's kind of one of those old school guys.
I think he's the only one left.
Still left
from
around,
back in
yeah.
the day.
He really is. You know, Johnny Sauter doesn't race but a couple races here and there anymore, and some of those other guys have hung it up or moved on. So, yeah, that's kind of what the Truck Series was when it started, with some of those guys, Jack Sprague, Ron Hornaday. That was a lot of fun back in the day. So, yeah, great milestone for Craftsman with 550 coming up when they hit Martinsville. And some other drivers with milestone starts at Martinsville. Bailey Curry will make his 50th start, and Tanner Gray will make his 100th start already. That's kind of crazy as well. I feel like he just started in the Truck Series not that long ago. And speaking of that lucky number 100, Christian Eckes will also hit that later on this season at Darlington. I feel like it was just yesterday he was winning ARCA races down on the dirt at Springfield. So,
yeah,
kind of
yep,
crazy.
I remember that race.
yeah, you were there as well. So, was crazy to see that he's already hitting 100 starts at the truck level. And also at Darlington, a couple other names that we're very familiar with here and also covered in their younger days. Corey Heim will hit his 50th start at Darlington, and Ty Majeski will hit his 75th Craftsman Truck Series start when the series rolls into Darlington Raceway later this season.
All right. Well, that's about it for the Craftsman Truck Series race at Bristol. I'm sure it's going to be entertaining. But we also have a NASCAR Cup Series race, the Food City 500 at Bristol Motor Speedway on Sunday, St. Patrick's Day, March 17th at 3:30 p.m. Eastern Time. It will be televised on Fox, starting with their pre-race coverage at 3 p.m. and radio coverage on PRN and SiriusXM NASCAR Radio. They'll go the distance of 500 laps to cover 266.5 miles. First two stages are 125 laps each. Stage one ends on lap 125, stage two on lap 250, and then the final stage will also be 250 laps, ending on lap 500. So, looking forward to this one for sure. Back on the track and no dirt.
Yeah, I'm super excited. Feels weird it's earlier in the season than normal. I feel like it's always in April and it's normally around my birthday. But I'm glad they did away with the dirt experience. I don't mind I don't mind trucks or cup, honestly, on dirt at tracks that are built for it. But it just seems silly to dump that dirt down on Bristol Motor Speedway, one of the better short tracks, or my favorite short track, on the Cup Series schedule. So really looking forward
That's
to both,
right.
both the trucks
Brian,
and
Cup. I think you and Sal have the same birthday.
Oh, yeah. I think you're right. I think we do. Yeah, April 18th.
I think so, yeah.
So originally they announced that they were going back onto the concrete, I was like, oh, great, maybe that'll be a birthday weekend trip this year. And then I saw the schedule, and I was like, oh, it's in March. That seems strange. But,
nice.
Yeah, a little too early to make that happen, but looking forward to hopefully getting to Bristol at some point in the next year or so for sure. So as the Cup Series heads to Bristol this weekend, very familiar name up on top of the points, and that is your last year champion, Ryan Blaney. He's done that via three top five finishes in those first four races. Super consistent early on for Blaney. Obviously was involved in that super close finish with Suarez and Kyle Busch at Atlanta that had everyone all excited. But three top fives in four races, Mr. Consistent so far this year. We got a 10-point lead over Larson in second, and Truex is in third as they head to Bristol this weekend. Blaney's made 14 trips to the world's fastest half mile, led 493 laps with two top five and five top 10 finishes. And that playoff race last September finished 22nd, which is probably a little bit disappointing, but still was able to go on and win the championship. If he were to go on and win that title again this year, he'd be the first driver since Jimmy Johnson's record 5 straight from 2006 to 2010 to win consecutive championships in the series. There have been a total of 10 drivers that have won consecutive titles, dating all the way back to the 50s with Buck Baker and some other historic names. Lee Petty did it in the 50s, Joe Weatherly in the 60s, David Pearson in the 60s. Richard Petty has done it twice, both in the 70s. Cale Yarborough also in the 70s. Darrell Waltrip in 1981 and 82. One Mr. Dale Earnhardt has done it 3 times, 86, 87, 90, 91, 93, 94. Jeff Gordon did it in 97 and 98. And, of course, Jimmy Johnson did that historic run from 2006 to 2010. That's quite the list of drivers we have there, with a couple of Petties: Pearson, Waltrip, Earnhardt, Gordon, Jimmy, Cale. I think that's pretty much all the best list of big names you can have. So crazy, I didn't realize that many of them had gone back-to-back. So Blaney would be looking to join some elite company there if he's able to win the championship again this year when the series heads back to Phoenix in November.
Yes, indeed. I feel like we're watching a transition to the next generation happening. I'm super excited for Ryan Blaney. I think he's winning that championship last year was really fun to watch. And then also for this next driver that we're going to talk about, he's hoping to go back-to-back, and that's Christopher Bell. He becomes the 4th different winner in as many races so far this season. The Toyota teams were super fast at Phoenix Raceway for Joe Gibbs Racing's Christopher Bell. He managed to pilot his number 20 to victory lane to mark that 4th different driver to win in 4 races so far this season. Now, the modern era for NASCAR is 1972 to 24, and so that's a record for different winners to start the NASCAR Cup Series season during that modern era. 1 driver had 10 consecutive wins set back in 2000. In that year, Hall of Famer Dale Earnhardt snapped a different winner streak by winning his 2nd race of the 2000 season at Richmond Raceway, race number 11 on the schedule. This season, Bell joins William Byron, who won at Daytona. Suarez, of course, won at Atlanta. Then it was Kyle Larson at Las Vegas and Christopher Bell last week out at Phoenix. So they are now locked into the Cup Series playoffs for this year by virtue of their wins. And Bell has earned a spot in the playoffs the last 3 consecutive seasons. So you got to wonder if this isn't going to be his year. He's been in the playoffs from 21, 22, 23, and now 24. He's riding the wave of momentum as he heads into Bristol this weekend. He's hoping to keep his early season success going at Bristol Motor Speedway. During the playoff race last September, Bell qualified on the pole and finished 3rd, which was a career best for him at Bristol. And in 6 starts at that half-mile short track, Bell has collected 2 top 5s and 3 top 10s. You got to think of him as a serious contender again this weekend. Bell has always been especially good on the short tracks, and to have 2 back-to-back like this, I think this weekend could be a winning weekend again for Christopher Bell.
Yeah, and kind of you mentioned with a little bit of the changing of the guard and some drivers breaking out. I think Bell is definitely one of those drivers. Obviously made the championship 4 last year, got the win early on this year. I think he's really just kind of settling into the JGR and just really kind of finding that groove. He continues to run better and better and be a factor week after week after week, and a name that we keep talking a little bit more about. I feel like maybe it was a little bit slower than people thought or would have liked earlier on when he made it up to the Cup Series. But I think lately he's really kind of coming into his own and really just, you know, great to see his level of excitement when he won last weekend and everything like that. And really cool to see and happy to kind of see what Bell's done so far.
And so far this moving season, on the, he's leading all the drivers at JGR.
I mean, Truex is probably close to retirement. And someone new will be coming in. He's kind of still above Gibbs. Gibbs is a little bit too young. And, you know, Hamlin's still there, but he hasn't won a championship yet either. So I think Bell looking to maybe take that P1 spot there at JGR. if he continues to perform like he has recently. Heading to Bristol this weekend, qualifying is going to be obviously super important given how quickly you can go a lap down at the short track. 27 races in Cup Series history there, 22% of the races have been won from that first position on the starting grid. 16 different drivers have gone to victory lane after starting on the pole. Brad Keselowski did it in 2020, Hamlin in 2019, and Kyle Busch in 2018. So, as I mentioned, qualifying will be super, super important. Qualifying in that top 10 is really going to be key. 78% of Cup races at Bristol have been won by drivers that start 10th or better, with 33% of those actually coming from the front row. Like we said, if you qualify in the back, it's going to be pretty easy to go a lap down. If you get yourself one of those pit road speeding penalties, like we discussed a little bit earlier in the show, also very easy to go a lap down. So definitely want to qualify up front this weekend. And I think one of the drivers that have probably the best chance to do that is Denny Hamlin. He's got 4 poles in Cup Series history at Bristol Motor Speedway. Kyle Busch has 2. Christopher Bell, who we just talked about, has a pole there, as well as Chase Elliott, Kyle Larson, Eric Jones, and Joey Logano. Logano kind of on a list for potential hot topics, but his rough start to the season, he's back in the 30s in points. So definitely looking forward to getting a good qualifying run in this weekend. And, of course, qualifying will take place on Saturday at 5 p.m. Eastern time with coverage on FS1, PRN, and Sirius XM NASCAR Radio.
All right. There's a lot of clubs in NASCAR, but one of those clubs is the Nine Wins Club. And Kyle Busch is hoping to get his 9th career win at Bristol. We've had some big names at Bristol, and Kyle Busch is certainly one of those. But this year, as well as last year, he's racing with a different team. He's racing with Richard Childress Racing, and he has an opportunity to join that elite list of the Nine Wins Club, a group of the most dominant drivers to ever race in the Cup Series. And to earn that prestigious spot in the statistical club, a driver must win at least 9 or more races at a single track. Since 1949, only 9 drivers have been able to accomplish that feat. Kyle Busch, of course, leads all active drivers. He's got 8 wins at the track the spring of 07. 2009, he swept there. He won in the fall of 2010, the spring of 2011, the fall again of 2017, the spring of 18, and the spring of 19. He can become the only active driver to win 9 times at a single track this weekend. Busch also has a win at Bristol Motor Speedway's dirt track in 2022, but that's considered a very different track statistically. Okay, now drivers that have won with 9 or more wins, tracks with 9 or more wins, Richard Petty, of course, the king of NASCAR, has the most. He's got 5 different tracks where he has 9 or more wins. Martinsville with 15, North Wilkesboro 15, Richmond 13, Rockingham 11, and Daytona 10. That's why we call him the king of NASCAR. Dale Earnhardt has 4 tracks, Talladega with 10, Atlanta with 9, Bristol with 9, and Darlington with 9. Darrell Waltrip has always been a king at Martinsville. He's got 12 wins at Bristol, 11 at Martinsville, and 10 at North Wilkesboro. Jimmy Johnson has 2 tracks where he's accomplished the feat, Dover with 11, Martinsville with 9. David Pearson, Cale Yarborough, Rusty Wallace, Jeff Gordon, and Kevin Harvick all have 1 track each where they have earned. Well, this is a little confusing because for David Pearson, they're showing me 2 tracks, Darlington with 10 and Michigan with 9. Same with Cale Yarborough, Bristol with 9 and Daytona with 9. And then Rusty Wallace has 9. As well as Jeff Gordon Rusty Wallace has 9 at Bristol. For Jeff Gordon, it's 9 at Martinsville, and Kevin Harvick 9 at Phoenix. Kyle Busch has 34 starts at Bristol Motor Speedway with those 8 wins, 14 top fives, and 19 top tens. So will he do it? I think there's a good possibility he will.
Yeah, I think so. I think you could very well sweep the weekend with the trucks and the Cup Series. Spent a little bit of time now since he's done the triple and swept there. He's done that twice, trucks, Xfinity, and Cup. Another driver with a great chance to end up in victory lane this weekend is the driver that was there last time the Cup Series was at the half-mile track, and that's none other than the driver of the number 11 Toyota for Joe Gibbs Racing, Denny Hamlin. Of course, he won the playoff race there last fall, and that's when he kind of uttered that famous phrase, now, I beat your favorite driver, all of them, and that definitely made the rounds. And, of course, since then, I guess it's come out that his dad told him he didn't really like how that sounded. He thought it was a little bit too cocky, and Denny said, all right, he's going to come up with something else. And he said, my dad will probably tell me not to say that anymore, and then I'll come up with something else after that. So if he does win, it'll be interesting to see if he has another phrase to kind of dig it into the fans that he won and they didn't. Of course, Hamlin seems to receive an awful lot of boos these days, maybe some rightfully so, and maybe some not. He does, you know, peel back, I feel like, that onion a little bit more and kind of show more of his personality than some other drivers do. From what you've heard, you know, allowed that Netflix special to kind of really delve into things, and I think that was awesome. And I just read a story from Bob Pockris yesterday, I think it was, kind of talking about their new Airspeed shop and everything that kind of went into that and stuff like that. And, of course, he's got his Actions Detrimental podcast now as well, where he talks on every week and provides some good insight. So love him or hate him, I think he's great for the sport. It's always good to kind of have somebody that people don't like, and as we can see, that can change around super quick, right? Everyone used to boo Jeff Gordon back in the day because he won all the time, and now pretty much everybody and their brother loves Jeff Gordon. So anyway, I digress from that, but let's get back to talking a little bit about Hamlin looking to go back-to-back in wins at Bristol. 12 different drivers have done that in the history, led by Darrell Waltrip. He actually won 8 consecutive times from 1979 to 1984 at Bristol Motor Speedway. And other drivers that have gone back-to-back include Fred Lorenzen, David Pearson, Bobby Allison, Cale Yarborough, who did it twice, Richard Petty, Dale Earnhardt, Alan Kulwicki, Rusty Wallace, Kurt Busch, Kyle Busch, and Brad Keselowski. So a great group of drivers there that have had some success at Bristol in the past.
You know, love him or hate him, you cannot deny Hamlin's stats. He does. He's got an amazing career on his resume. And he always gives us a lot to talk about on Hot Topics.
Yeah, that sounds like a plan. But, yeah, I think, for sure. Other than that championship, he's done pretty much everything you can do in the NASCAR Cup Series. So, he's definitely in polarizing personality. And like you said, love him or hate him, I think he's good for NASCAR.
Okay, let's take a look at some drivers to watch this weekend. Former Bristol winners. So they've hosted, Bristol Motor Speedway's had 123 Cup Series race, giving us 44 different winners since 1961. This week, 6 of the 44 previous winners are entered in the Food City 500, and they're going to be looking to add to their win total. Kyle Busch, as we've mentioned, has 8 wins, dating from 07 to 19. Brad Keselowski and Denny Hamlin both have 3 wins. Joey Logano has 2, and Chris Buescher and Kyle Larson both have 1 win. They're the most recent. Well, Denny Hamlin had a win in 23 just last year, but other than that, the most other 2 drivers winning in the last 3 years are Kyle Larson in 21 and Chris Buescher in 22. Excuse me. After his runner-up finish last weekend, though, at Phoenix Raceway, I've got a sneaky suspicion that RFK Racing's Chris Buescher is one to watch this weekend at Bristol. Buescher made 14 starts still. Excuse me. He's posted 1 win there, as we mentioned, in 22. He also has 3 top fives and 4 top tens. He's going to be looking for redemption, I think, this weekend at Bristol.
Yeah, I would agree. And another driver that needs some luck this weekend at Bristol is none other than No Luck Logano so far this year. In 4 races, he's finished 28th or worse 3 times and has him way back in the 30th position in the point standings. Definitely not where Team Penske felt they would be after 4 races this year. I can guarantee you that. It's actually the worst points position for Logano after four races since his rookie year, all the way back in 2009, where he was 33rd after the first four races of the year. Fortunately or unfortunately, however you want to look at it, all it's going to take is one win to make the playoffs, and I do think Logano will get that win and put this early string of bad luck behind him, maybe even this weekend at Bristol Motor Speedway. Made 27 starts there before, does have two wins, six top fives, 10 top tens, but he has struggled in the next-gen race car on the concrete surface at Bristol, finishing 27th in 2022, although that was due to a suspension failure, and 34th being caught up in an accident in 2023. So he does not have the best finishes on the concrete in the next-gen car, but we'll look to see what he can do this weekend, and hopefully he can get, at least get a good finish and get himself up a little bit higher in the point standings, because I don't think anyone would have expected him to be 30th after four races.
Yeah, he's a two-time Cup Series champion, so you just can't – it's hard to believe that the luck that he's been having here in the 24 season. So I agree with you. That luck's going to turn around at some point, and then it's going to be watch out. He's going to be lights out, and there's no looking back. But hopefully he'll turn that around here at Bristol Motor Speedway. It might be a tough track to turn around tough luck, though, because – a lot of drivers experience bad luck at that track. So we'll see what happens for Logano this weekend. But next we're going to look at some of the newer drivers in the sport, the Sunoco Rookie Spotlight. And Carson Hocevar is off to a pretty quick start so far this season. He is leading the Sunoco Rookie points by 22 points over Stewart Haas Racing's Josh Berry, who sits in second. In four starts so far this season, Hocevar has won the Sunoco Rookie Race Award twice in four races. So he's got two top 10 finishes. He currently ranks 24th now in the Cup Series driver standings. But keep an eye on Hocevar this weekend. He hails from Michigan, and he's made his series track debut at Bristol last year. He started 16th, and he was able to drive up to an 11th place finish. So I would keep my eye on Carson Hocevar and what he's able to do this weekend. He's one of those drivers that could be good or bad at a short track, but we'll see what he does this weekend. Of the four rookies this season, Hocevar, Josh Berry, Zane Smith, and Kaz Grala, Hocevar is the only one to have made a previous start at Bristol. So Berry, Smith, and Grala are all making debuts this weekend at the world's fastest half-mile track, Bristol Motor Speedway. We'll see what happens.
And as I head to Tennessee, there's only actually one driver in the field that calls Tennessee home these days, and that's Josh Berry, rookie this year with Stewart Haas Racing. A total of 109 different drivers in NASCAR National Series history have called Tennessee home, though, but only 15 have actually won a race in their home state. Only 15 have won a NASCAR National Series race anywhere, and only two have won in the state of Tennessee, and that's Darrell Waltrip, who has 12 wins at Bristol and 8 wins at Nashville, and Joe Lee Johnson, who has 1 win at Nashville. So Berry will look to become just the third driver from Tennessee to win in his home state in Cup Series history. Berry, of course, making his Cup Series debut at Bristol this weekend. He does have three Xfinity Series starts there with just one top 10 result.
Yeah, these cars are very different, though, from the Xfinity Series cars. We'll see how Josh Berry does, but wouldn't that be great to see him win at his home track? That would be a popular win, I think, for sure.
I would agree.
Okay, more than 20 years since we've had a first-time winner at Bristol, so it's been a long time coming. Veterans have been gobbling up the wins at Bristol over the last 20 years or so that would be a huge win. So there hasn't been a first-time winner at the track since 2002, but there have been some big names that have earned their first career win in the Cup Series at Bristol, including Dale Earnhardt, who did it on April Fool's Day back in 1979, Rusty Wallace on April 6th in 1986, Ernie Irvin on March 25th back in 1990, and Elliott Sadler March 25th. That goes all the way back to 2001. And Kurt Busch won there on March 24th back in 2002. But will we see a new winner there this weekend? There's 12 drivers, or 33% of the drivers entered this weekend, that are looking for their first career NASCAR Cup Series victory. Those drivers include Tennessee native Josh Berry, Harrison Burton, Ty Gibbs, Todd Gilliland, Noah Gregson, Kaz Grala, Daniel Hemric, Carson Hocevar, Corey LaJoie, John Hunter Nemechek, Ryan Preece, and Zane Smith. You have any favorites in that group, Brian, that might get their first win after 20 years?
I mean, I think I picked the same driver last week when we had this kind of conversation about the driver getting their first win at the track, and I think I'd have to go with Ty Gibbs. But I'd say, John, if I had to pick someone other than that, maybe John Hunter Nemechek. Or Ryan Preece, he's got a lot of short track experience in his background. So I think potentially between one of those three would be my picks out of that group to potentially make that happen. But that definitely is, as you mentioned, is a pretty tall task, I feel like, to get that done at Bristol.
Yeah, and just like last week, I would have to agree with all your picks. So
that's fair.
Okay.
Yeah, so okay.
No, go ahead.
Oh, so
I was just
going to
lead into it.
Yeah, speaking of Phoenix last week, a little bit of interest in history made, kind of crazy that it hasn't happened before, but also kind of a cool stat. There were five different drivers that led 50 or more laps by the same manufacturer, and that was, of course, Toyota. They had a very, very strong performance last Sunday at Phoenix with Christopher Bell going to victory lane. He led 50 of those laps in that race. But Denny Hamlin led 68, Tyler Reddick also led 68, Ty Gibbs led 57, and Martin Truex Jr. led 55. And as I mentioned, that's the Toyota be the first manufacturer to have five different drivers that led 50 or more laps in a single NASCAR Cup Series race. Kind of crazy that hasn't happened with all the years of Chevy and Ford running around up there, but kind of a cool stat, and I found that one interesting when it popped up. And also when looking at consistency so far this year and laps completed, four drivers have actually turned 100% of the laps led through the first four races of the season and finished on the lead lap of those first four races: Chase Elliott, Ty Gibbs, Martin Truex Jr., and William Byron. Those are your four that have been very, very consistent so far this year. No DNFs, on the lead lap, and run every single lap of Cup Series competition through the first four of them.
Yes, indeed. And certainly drivers to keep your eye on this weekend. Six of those drivers have scored their best career finish at Bristol last September, the last time that the Cup Series competed out at Bristol. So those drivers include Denny Hamlin, of course, that won there. That was a career best for him. Christopher Bell finished third. Ty Gibbs finished fifth, Michael McDowell sixth, Carson Hocevar 11th, and Todd Gilliland finished in 16th place. So can they better their career best finishes this weekend? We'll have to watch and see what happens. We've got a series of upcoming milestones for some of the drivers and people to watch in the Cup Series. Starts, Bubba Wallace is making his 225th NASCAR Cup Series start at Circuit of the Americas in 5 weeks. Also at Circuit of the Americas, it's going to be Christopher Bell getting his 150th Cup Series start. Talking about longevity, Joey Logano is expected to make his 550th NASCAR Cup Series career start at Richmond Raceway. If he does so, well, we know he's going to start there. He'll become the 39th different driver to reach that 550th or more Cup Series start. Christopher Buescher, he'll be making his 300th Cup Series start career start at Richmond Raceway. For wins, Martin Truex Jr., if he wins the race this season, he'll be tied with Brad Keselowski for the 24th on the all-time Cup Series wins list with 35 wins. So that'll be a big milestone for him. Kyle Larson, if he wins another race this season, he'll reach his 25 career wins, becoming the 36th different driver all-time in the Cup Series to reach 25 victories. And for Wood Brothers Racing as an organization, if they win this season, it'll be their 100th Cup Series victory. They currently have 99 wins in the series. For laps led, these drivers can reach milestones in the laps led wins category this weekend. Eric Jones, his next milestone, let's see, we've got one, two, three, four, five drivers that are looking to hit the 1,000th milestone. So Eric Jones needs 173 laps in order to hit that mark. For J.J. Allmendinger, he needs 369 more laps to hit 1,000. Chris Buescher needs 391 laps to hit that mark. And Ricky Stenhouse Jr., he needs 390. Ricky Stenhouse Jr. actually needs 438 laps to hit the 1,000 mark. Bubba Wallace needs 463 laps in order to hit that 1,000 milestone. Some of the other milestones, let's hit the 3,000 milestone. William Byron still needs 360 laps in order to hit 3,000. For 4,000, we're looking at Ryan Blaney. He needs 254 laps to hit that milestone. And 8,000 is the next milestone. Kyle Larson needs 8,000, it's Kyle Larson who needs 239 laps to hit the 8,000 laps led milestone. And the highest milestone here is Joey Logano. He's looking to hit the 9,000 mark with 446 more laps needed to lead. So some big milestones coming up in the laps led category. There might be some drivers that hit their mark this weekend at Bristol. Any guesses on who that might be?
Yeah, you got a pretty good chance with 500 laps going on this weekend. Definitely think Kyle Larson could get that 8,000 milestone mark by leading 239 of the 500 laps. Maybe Blaney could get close as well with the 254. And I know that Byron will lead 360 of them, but I wouldn't be surprised if he leads a little bit there as well and chops that down to get a little bit closer to the 3,000 laps led milestone.
Okay, there you have it, the drivers to watch out at Bristol this weekend for laps led. But there's a breakfast club, another club.
Yeah, this is like a club-themed show, I guess. We're just talking about a lot of clubs. But, yeah, different, you know, I feel like a lot of the pre-race concerts that we have at NASCAR races are typically country-based, and some fans love that and some fans hate it. This weekend got a little bit different flavor. The Breakfast Club, a 1980s tribute band, is going to be playing the pre-race concert at Bristol Motor Speedway, covering a bunch of the greatest hits from the 1980s, which is right up my alley, being a kid born in the 80s. Jerry Caldwell, the president and general manager of Bristol Motor Speedway, commented that, you know, they're going back to the concrete this weekend at the racetrack, and at the same time, they're trying to take their guests back in time with some activities at the track. And the band certainly fits the bill to accomplish that. If an 80s tribute band is your jam and you're heading out to Bristol Motor Speedway this weekend, that concert will be from 1:30 to 2:30 p.m. on race day, live from the pre-race stage in the infield near the start-finish line leading into the pre-race ceremonies and driver introductions for Sunday afternoon's Food City 500.
Yeah, you and I have been a part of some of those in the past, and it's always a lot of fun to be a part of those concerts that take place. I've seen drivers come out for those concerts as well. So really a cool place to kind of go shoulder to shoulder with some of the drivers that enjoy music as well.
Agreed.
Okay, that pretty much covers our preview for the races weekend. I think I'm going to go over to our fantasy picks, and we don't have all of them in yet, but I can give you some of the picks that have already been given. Let's start with the truck race here. Tommy Kraft was first up. His pick was Corey Heim for this weekend. Then Andy Lasky took Kyle Busch. That's a pretty easy pick right there.
yes.
That, that put me up. I actually took Grant Infinger for this weekend. I guess I think he's always good on the short tracks, and I think Infinger is really good at Bristol. Then Jay Huseman took Christian Eckes. We didn't make it easy on you for you, Brian. You want to tell us who you took for this weekend?
As you get down further in the order, there can be slim picking sometimes, I believe. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe I went with Zane Smith for this weekend.
You did. You took Zane Smith for this weekend.
But Zane was a good pick, for sure.
Yeah, I think, you can't go wrong with Zane Smith. He's really good in the truck series. And this is kind of a return for him in the truck series. He's been racing in the Cup Series this year. So it's really good to see him back in the trucks. Mike Orzel went with the guy that a lot of people are calling the real deal and really impressed with his win already this season, Raja Karuth. And so we're still waiting for Owen's pick. I've got to get out to him. So Randy's kind of biting at the bit for who he's going to pick. So I'll have to get out to Owen and get his pick for the truck series because I think he is the last pick other than Randy. Randy, by the way, is our random pick in our Fan for Racing group. So we've affectionately called him Randy for our picks here in the Fan for Racing group.
We're gonna feel pretty bad when he wins all three series point standings for the year.
That's right. You never know. Then we went to the Cup Series, and I went back-to-back for C. Bell to be the winner this weekend in the Cup Series. Mike Orzel said, huh? I thought you said something.
Oh, no, you're good.
Mike Orzel says Reddick's going to catch him this weekend and take that lead. Andy Lasky said we asked him if he was going to go with Stewart Haas Racing, one of Randy's favorite teams. But Andy went with Ty Gibbs to get that win this weekend. Owen took Brian Blaney for the weekend. And Jay Huseman went with Chase Elliott. And do you remember who your pick is for the Cup Series?
I do, mainly because I remember my comment I made after it. I said I was going with Ross Chastain this weekend because I wanted to smash some watermelon. And I guess now that he's got Busch Light, we can smash some watermelon and chug a Busch Light if he gets a win. So I picked Chastain this weekend. I think, I love his attitude. I love his style. And I think he's got a chance of getting it done. Although definitely if I could have picked anybody, I think I would have went Larson first and Bell. So no surprise that those two guys were a couple of the first guys off of the board and a little bit of slimmer pickings when I got down to mine.
Yeah, that's true, because you did well last weekend. Tommy Kraft, his pick for this weekend and one of his usual picks is William Byron. And then it was Randy's turn to pick, and Randy went with the one that I said is one to watch this weekend, Chris Buescher. So we'll see what happens there, but all the picks are in for the Cup Series here, and I guess I'm holding up Randy for the Xfinity Series, so I'm going to have to get that pick in as soon as possible. Okay, so what else do we have to talk about here for the Cup Series or the Xfinity Series or ARCA Menards Series? Anything else you want to bring up?
I'm trying to think. Not that much I can think of. I feel like it was a quieter news week. I feel like, Phoenix was maybe a little bit calmer of a race than people were expecting. Maybe not quite what people were expecting from the revised short track package. I think you had a lot of negative comments from the drivers right after practice. I think the race was okay, in my opinion. I don't think it was the best race I've ever seen by any means, but not every race is going to be. I wasn't personally disappointed by it. I know Bell won by a significant margin, but that's racing, that's motorsports. Some days you're going to have a driver that just really hits it, makes, the right moves at the right time, the right calls, and Bell did that. And, I think
one of the best cars won. So anytime that one of the best cars wins, I feel okay with the race, whether that was by 0.0004 seconds or by 14 seconds. It doesn't necessarily matter to me. That's what makes the crazy finishes exciting. But I think in some cases we just try to come to expect that or try to force that almost every week. I do kind of like, you know, there's been a lot of talk from Hamlin on his podcast this week. I think Larson mentioned it as well. I don't know if he was on one of the Dirty Mo Media shows that, you know, they should increase the horsepower. And at least from what those guys are saying, that's something that could be done very quickly and not cost teams that much money. So that's kind of what they think should be done. I don't know if they'll do that. I think it's also worth noting that while Bristol is a short track, they are not running that package there this weekend. I believe it's Bristol and Dover. They're not, and all the other tracks a mile or less in length, they are. So a little bit different. We won't get to see that this weekend. But curious to see what you thought of the race on Sunday, Sharon. Did it meet your expectations, and how are you feeling about it?
I'm very much in the same vein as you. I don't expect every race to be three wide milliseconds for the finish. I think that sometimes on those short tracks, they are trying a new package. Some drivers found what they were looking for in that package. Some drivers are still looking. And I think Toyota's, obviously, they found something that works with that package. Now, they did admit in the post-race interviews that they were part of the testing with that new package, so that gave them a little bit of an edge. And I think that when drivers, when these other teams kind of figure it out, they will, it'll make it a little bit harder for the Toyotas. But I thought some of the post-race comments from the winning team and the winning crew chief were kind of interesting, especially given that there were a couple drivers out there, like you said, that are calling for adding more horsepower. Adam Stevens was asked the question, how much did you feel like you could make moves and move around traffic? Last fall, you got stuck behind the 17. Today, you were able to make moves. Well, Adam Stevens said, yeah, that's a good question. One data point, that's the one we have. We'll talk about it for sure. But we had a good car. When we were tight at the start, we weren't moving forward. We barely held our ground. But when we got the balance close, Christopher Bell, he said he was able to make moves and get up there. I think if anything, you could say there was an improvement there. You have to ask some of the other competitors really to get a better feel for that. But I thought when we had a run, we could get close and closer than we ever could, and we were able to make that move. Now, the other thing I like, and a lot of people didn't realize that there was also a change in the tire this weekend at Phoenix. So the tire was a big part of what was happening at the track. They made that tire so that they could slide around the track a little bit more, and certainly a lot of drivers were doing that. Some had their balance right, and they were able to slide around and still move forward. Some didn't have their tire right. Didn't have their setup right. Their balance wasn't all there, and that's why they lost it. But Adam Stevens went on to say, the other thing I liked was the tire and the track conditions, and the reduced downforce overall kind of widened the racetrack out a little bit. You could run too wide on both ends of the racetrack, and you could pass high if you had to and pass low if you needed to. It was just overall racier, I would say. I thought those were revealing comments. And to me, after reading those comments and hearing those comments from Adam Stevens, the running crew chief at that racetrack, it got me to thinking, you know, drivers, a lot of those comments that came from drivers, and I know we've had a couple of drivers that continue to say it after the race, but they made those comments after practice. And if your team did well in practice, then you might not have had those same feelings. But if you didn't do well during that practice, then you might have had other feelings. And let's face it, when drivers don't win a race, then they're not happy with the package. They're not happy with the car, and so they're going to have negative comments. But I think that the real question that the drivers and teams need to ask after this race, because Chevrolet's dominated all season long. This is the first track, a short track, that Chevrolet didn't dominate, and the Toyotas excelled. They were at that practice, and then not practice, I'm talking about the test session for this new package, and they found the thing that I think I heard in the post-race comments was the balance. If you got the balance right, those drivers were able to move forward. If the balance wasn't right, that they weren't able to move forward. And these guys that were doing well on the track and making passes on the track liked that tire and liked that slipping around on the track. And let's face it, some drivers are really good with a slick surface like that when they can slide around on the track. And one of those drivers is Christopher Bell. He's exceptional when it comes to racing on short tracks and on dirt. He likes that slide feel, and he was able to manage his car. So I think the real questions that these teams need to be asking themselves is, what did Toyota have that the rest of the teams didn't have? And Denny Hamlin kind of surprised me with his comments, because he's in that Toyota group, and yet he was calling for, when Adam Stevens is saying the reduced downforce is what worked for them this weekend, I'm kind of surprised that Denny Hamlin's calling for adding downforce. I think they're asking the wrong questions, and they're looking in the wrong direction, and that's just from my perspective.
Yeah. I think it's like a lot of things. Nobody ever knows what they want, and not everyone's ever going to be happy, no matter what sort of change you make, and it's interesting. I was just kind of doing a little bit of looking around in research there as well, talking about, obviously the drivers say, oh, we can make this horsepower change tomorrow, but I refer to the GOAT of NASCAR information, one Mr. Bob Pockrass, and he indicated that his understanding is it definitely would not be quite that simple. Obviously, they've got all these engines prepped for future races. They're sealed. There's rules around, when and how you can use those engines. They would have to change rules around for that. They'd probably want to do some sort of wind tunnel testing and things like that as well. So while Hamlin seemed to indicate a quick call to Jim France could make that happen, and maybe it could, I don't think anything's ever as simple as driver or anyone indicates that it could be. So I do think that's the answer. I also don't know that you, as I mentioned on this show before, I don't like the mid-season rule changes unless they're, in the need or interest in safety. So, but definitely something I think they should look at for 2025 seasons. Been something that everybody and their brother seems to have talked about for a long time. Obviously, we're far from engineers and experts, but it just seems like such a simple answer and kind of just brings back to the day of horsepower and just, more power and just speed behind these cars. It's more noise. I don't know. It just gets me giddy thinking about that. But also a point that was made this week, and I forget by who. I think I saw it in scrolling Twitter. But, more horsepower could lead to more strung out finishes, which, again, a lot of people will get up in arms about that and be angry about that. So I think no matter what change you make, you're not going to make everyone happy. And whoever's upset normally tends to speak the loudest via the social channels and get the most attention to it. So like I said, I thought Phoenix was a fine race. It wasn't amazing. I don't necessarily know that Phoenix, for the product it produces, deserves to be the championship race for forever. Obviously, going to Phoenix in November isn't a bad gig for anybody, but I think it was Jordan Bianchi this week was reporting that in 2025, it sounds like that championship race may shift elsewhere. I've heard potentially back to Homestead, Miami, which obviously is another great place to be in November. And, obviously when they're looking at place for the championship venue, they're not just looking at the track or the product. They're looking at, what you can do around the track and the environment and everything like that for all those sponsors and dignitaries and all that good stuff. But I do think that, a change from Phoenix is maybe necessary for the championship race. But I wasn't, disappointed by Sunday. Maybe not as excited. I think the driver comments after practice are what kind of got me down and out a little bit. But then I watched the race and I was like, I thought it was perfectly fine. I wasn't like
this is awful. I wasn't like, oh, this is the best thing ever either. So I think you can keep making tweaks and changes, but as NASCAR makes tweaks to make things better, teams will get better to make things better. And I think you'd be in this constant change of what do we change and what do we do different to produce a better racing product. But I do think they should definitely give this more horsepower thing a chance for next season at a minimum.
Well, I'm glad you ended with that, Brian, because you and I both do a lot of research for this show. And one of the things that I researched and came across as I was researching, I can't remember where I saw it now. I'm looking for it. But there was another reason why NASCAR is so reluctant to reduce, to add more horsepower, and that's because they're trying to attract another manufacturer. And when you increase the horsepower, it discourages some of those manufacturers from coming into our sport. So NASCAR has kind of made a commitment not to increase the downforce for that reason. They're trying to attract new manufacturers into the sport. And if they increase that horsepower, that is going to be a discouragement to having a new manufacturer come in. If you give me a minute here, if you want to talk about some other things, I'll see if I can find out where I read that. But that is one of the reasons why NASCAR has kind of dug
yep.
in on that, and they're not looking forward to – they're not wanting to. You've read that too, Brian?
I have seen that, yeah, and I do think that's a fair point. I think counterpoint to that, how long has it been since they've had a new manufacturer in NASCAR, right? That was Dodge how many ever years ago, and now they're no longer around. Obviously, we're not privy to – the conversations they may be having with potential new manufacturers, but is it really going to happen? Does it really need to happen? I mean, do we really need more than Chevy, Ford, and Toyota? I personally don't think so. I get that, yeah, another manufacturer could allow, you know, maybe some of these other teams to join up with them. You know, more does make things more competitive, right? Obviously, you're going to step up your game if there's a fourth or even a fifth manufacturer that enters the fray, but I just feel like it's never happened in all these years. And I guess I don't know enough details around, will that really keep anyone away because we've increased the horsepower? I'd like to think not, but obviously powers that be think that could very well be the case. And I guess I get that, but I also feel that there's not a new manufacturer that's, you know, pretty close to signing. Cause as we know, once they say they're coming, that's still going to be a couple-year time frame, lead time out until
right.
they're actually on the track, right? So I feel like we're saying that, but, like, we're just kind of waiting, and I don't know if that's going to happen. And let's just put some more horsepower in there and see what happens. But sounds simple, but I don't know.
Yeah, there is a lot of factors that go into decisions that NASCAR make. And you bring up some valid points there, but I will say that we did bring in a new manufacturer a few years ago with Toyota. Now, I remember Toyota being new and a lot of people not being happy.
I can't believe I just had that complete brain gap there. Yeah, you are 110% right. We did just bring in Toyota, not all.
Yeah, they did. And
fair
we
point.
Lost Dodge. So in the process. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Brian.
No, I was just saying, yeah, no, thanks for bringing that up. I feel very dumb on that comment. I can't believe I didn't think about Toyota. But anyway, I digress.
And I know we've been hearing rumors over the course of time here. The latest rumor is that Honda is seriously looking at NASCAR and that we may see Honda as soon as 2025 or 2026. Like you say, it does take time. But Honda is the most recent one that NASCAR has talked about, that they are in talks with as a potential new manufacturer coming into NASCAR. Now, we've heard this before, and I know that there's a lot of skepticism. Sometimes when we hear the rumors, a lot of times people will say, well, I'll believe it when I see it. But this one seems to me, anyway, it seems a little bit more serious than some of the rumors that we've heard in the past. So time always tells the rest of the story, if you will. We'll see what happens. But I think it's a legitimate reason for why NASCAR has decided not to increase that downforce is to attract the other other manufacturers back to come into our sport. I know Jay's been super disappointed that Dodge hasn't made the return back to our sport, but it sounds like Honda could be the next one. We'll have to wait and see if it comes true.
Yeah, I've heard and seen a lot about Honda being potentially the one. So if it happens, great. And if it doesn't, I guess it doesn't. Doesn't really move the needle for me, but definitely excitement. It was super exciting when Dodge came into the fray way back when, and Toyota, as you mentioned, and they've, you know, obviously led to Chevy and Ford needing to step up their game, because obviously, as I said, Toyota dominated last week, and other new manufacturers coming into them quite well with JGR and 2311 being the lead teams there, and now Legacy Motor Club stepping in with them as well. So I think it'll be interesting to see, and then when it comes to that, which teams would go with Honda, you know, at this point. I've heard rumblings that Ford and SHR may part ways after this year or in the near future. Don't know if that's true or not, where they would go, but yeah, it's interesting to see which teams then would maybe move in the Honda direction from where they're at currently.
Absolutely. So there's always more to the picture, I think, is the moral of the story here. I feel like we've slid into our Hot Topics home here, Brian,
yep.
to use a baseball analogy. But, yeah, we've hit on a lot of topics here. Are there any others that we want to hit on here? We don't have a lot of Hot Topics up here, do we?
I feel like it was kind of a quiet week for some of that stuff. Like I said, I feel like there wasn't really any controversy or anything super controversial coming out of Phoenix other than just the package and what people thought and kind of some of those comments this week. Obviously, heading into Bristol, got a lot of people excited about it being off the dirt and back on the concrete and what that means. But, yeah, I feel like it's kind of been a quiet week, knock on wood, for things. It probably means Bristol is going to be nuts and crazy and who knows what'll happen. But yeah, I feel like it's been a little bit quieter of a week for Hot Topics. Something I'm sure you guys probably touched on Monday's show, but something's kind of been on my mind this week, and when I was watching the ARCA race at Phoenix last weekend, was Robusto had like an amazing race. Like we had talked about her leading in. Like I said, I wasn't very familiar with her prior to getting ready for the show last week, and you know, did some reading up on her and background, and we all kind of talked about it on Hot Topics, and you know, watch her perform, and a really great performance for her. So I'm really kind of excited to see what she can bring to the table going forward this season with an event or any car.
Yes, I was so excited to see Isabel Robusto have such a strong finish out at Phoenix in the ARCA Menards Series race. We actually have had her on the show. Not a lot, but I know she's made an appearance on our show, and we've had an opportunity to talk to her when she was racing before her ARCA days. So to see her coming into the ARCA Menards Series, we had four women racing that race. Tony Breidinger had a good finish as well. Both of them finished in the top 10. But she's just 19 years old from Fort Mill, South Carolina, and she suffered a concussion in the Pro Late Model crash at North Carolina's Hickory Motor Speedway last April. And that incident kept her off the track for most of the year. So she's coming back this year. She's racing with Venturini Motorsports. So she's with a really good team this year. And so she had her debut at the Phoenix Raceway in the General Tire 100. She says that she feels a lot stronger since her accident, and she feels that delay has made her develop herself and make her a stronger candidate. And so that's kind of exciting as well. And it certainly showed. I will say it showed at Phoenix Raceway. There were times that she was racing right up in the top five. So I can't wait, like you. I can't wait to see what she does for the rest of the season. But I do think that Isabella Robusto is going to be the real deal this year in the ARCA Menards Series.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. And I didn't see anything last weekend that would change my mind on that. I think
positive vibes for her, and wait to see when she gets out there in her next races. I know she's running a variety of kind of ARCA races throughout the main East and West. I believe she's going to race at Sonoma in Kansas, I've heard as well. So I'm curious to see, you know, based on a good performance, what else that can lead to. Obviously, as we know, run a couple good races, get another more sponsorship dollars or another seat in another car or series, and it can lead to some good things.
Yeah, another thing to kind of keep in mind, she raced last month at the World Series of Asphalt Stock Car Racing at New Smyrna Speedway, and she had four top fives and a fourth place points finish after that speed week's racing out at New Smyrna. So I am, if you want to read more about her, I would suggest you head over to ArcaRacing.com or the NASCAR regional site. They've got a feature on Isabella Robusto. It was actually before the ARCA Menards Series race at Phoenix, but I am telling you, you'll want to get to know Isabel Robusto, and this is a good way to do it by reading that feature article about her over at ArcaRacing.com.
Yeah, and real quick, too, just to kind of update on what her schedule is looking like for the next handful of races. She's going to run some Cars Tours races coming up March 23rd. She's going to run at New River All-American Speedway in Florida. She'll be in that ARCA race at Irwindale on March 30th, April 6th. Back in a Cars Tour race at Hickory Motor Speedway, and April 20th, Cars Tour race again at Orange County Speedway, North Carolina. And looking just quickly through the schedule, it's going to run at the Nashville Fairgrounds with ARCA, Portland with ARCA, Sonoma with ARCA, and then pretty much a bunch of Cars Tour events, Elko with ARCA as well, and Kansas, as I mentioned, with ARCA, and looks like Kern Raceway as well. With notes, it's schedule kind of subject to change, and I think it'll just kind of depend on how the season goes. We may see some more races added there throughout the year.
Yeah, I think sponsors are going to be climbing on board when they see her continue to race. I was going to say something there. Oh, Kern County Raceway is now Kevin Harvick's Kern Raceway.
I almost corrected myself as I said that, yeah.
Kevin Harvick's Kern Raceway this season, and I think it's fantastic. That's his hometown, his home track, and I think it's really cool that they're doing that this season. So I think we've pretty much covered everything for Isabella Robusto and where you can watch her throughout the year. And like Brian said, I would count on her adding more races as the season progresses and as people see that she is the real deal. Okay, what's next for us? I know we've got some topics that you weren't here to talk over with us, so is there anything else that you kind of wanted to talk about?
Nothing really top of my mind. Something I just thought was kind of funny and interesting this week. Chris Buescher had a media availability with Ford, and obviously he's won at Bristol and has that infamous sword that you get as part of winning at Bristol. And someone had asked him about it, and he said currently it's just kind of laying around for the last couple of years. He's been trying to get his own shop kind of in order and hang stuff up, but he basically doesn't have any of his trophies or anything very well organized or in a good spot. So he said hopefully one day he'll be on the media availability and all that stuff will be hung up in the background and look really cool. But I just thought that was kind of interesting to me. I feel like if I'd won a trophy as cool as that, it'd be mounted above the TV in my living room or somewhere. So found that entertaining this week.
Yeah, you know, Chris Buescher, I've had a chance to talk to him at the track a few times, and I know you probably have too. Chris Buescher is kind of a real-life guy. When I talked to him, we were talking about some of the places that he stayed at as he was trying to get into NASCAR and some of the friendships and stuff that he's made along the way. But a lot of people may recall him and his wife just had a baby too, so I'm sure he's going through a lot of life changes right now. So he's just a real life guy.
Yeah, I would.
Didn't he go
agree
home
with that.
For the? for the birth of his first child?
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah, I think so.
Speaking of the famous Bristol sword, kind of another cool little social spotlight this week, Joe Gibbs Racing did a little thing with all four of their Cup Series drivers and trying to throw an apple and have them catch it on the sword. And that was kind of interesting
to
watch. I think it was on TikTok or something like that. It was one of a friend's actually sent it to me, and that was just kind of entertaining, interesting way to kind of put out some different and various social content during the week, especially as we kind of head into the heart of the season there. And then I'm talking a little more about on-track activity. They are testing at North Wilkesboro Speedway this week. I'm getting ready for the upcoming races there. I forget exactly which drivers. I know Ty Gibbs is one of them testing today out there at North Wilkesboro, and I think that'll be super exciting to see. I'm excited to see that back again this year.
Yes, indeed. Also, MBM Motorsports, remember them? They're entering their first Cup race in nearly 2 years. They're going to enter a car at COTA next weekend. So that's going to be big news. And let's see, Timmy Hill is going to drive the number 66 Ford out there. So that's pretty cool to see them come back into the series.
Yeah, always always good news to have more teams and more people, and good news for Timmy Hill.
Let's see. Yeah, you're right. Did you see who the drivers are in that North Wilkesboro test?
I thought Logano. I know Ty Gibbs. I'm just kind of
William Byron.
I think William Byron was out there as well. Maybe those are the three. Those are the guys from each manufacturer.
Yeah, those are the three drivers from each manufacturer that are going to be at that test. So that's going to be interesting to see if that gives them an edge up. All three series are there. I think all three series were also at the test for the new package and the tire at Phoenix. It's just that Toyota walked away with, they figured out that the balance on that car was all the difference in the world. So, and they like that tire.
And I think that gives Toyota, at least if they can make it into the championship, for a leg up on that. I'm sure the other manufacturers are hard at work already. Probably they were even before this Phoenix race to try to figure something out there, because obviously Toyota kind of took it to the rest of them. And I think if there's one, two, or maybe even three Toyota drivers in that championship four, they're going to have a leg up on that for sure, and be the heavy championship favorite.
Okay. And I was thinking another thing we could do here is look at the Fantasy Central and maybe do some of the fantasy picks here for this weekend.
Yeah.
We didn't do that during our preview part of the show, so I'm going to start with the Xfinity series.
That I can't believe I forgot to post in our channel, but they broke news a couple of days ago here. I think that Lee Diffy is going to be in the NBC broadcast booth once the Olympics are over, replacing Rick Allen. I thought that was maybe a little bit surprising.
Wow.
We kind of anticipated some sort of shakeup was going to be coming to the NBC booth with Dale Jr. announcing that he was leaving. But I don't think I would have guessed that it would have been Lee Diffy coming in to be the lead guy over Rick Allen. I believe it was Adam Stern that broke that news a day or two ago. So didn't really get a chance to read much more about that, but just saw that.
That's very interesting.
So, he's expected to take over as the lead announcer, not until after the Olympic break, which obviously they're going to have the couple-week Olympic break in the schedule this year. NBC broadcasting the Olympics, so Cup gets kind of a couple extra two-week little summer break there, if you will.
Okay, yeah, that's pretty interesting. One of my favorites, I see it here at Jayski's. So I thought it was my all-time favorite is Alan Bestwick. I don't know why he's not with NASCAR anymore.
I really hope Amazon's going to sign him. I want an Alan Bestwick Dale Jr. booth. I think maybe the biggest disappointment about SRX not being around is just hearing Bestwick back in the booth again was just fantastic.
Yeah, yeah. So NASCAR picks up the second half of the season. The exact race that Diffie will start at NASCAR after the games, it's not clear yet, but NASCAR races at Michigan on August 18th, Daytona on August 24th, are what they're looking at, I guess. So, yeah, that's really interesting. You're right. I think we anticipated that there would be some kind of addition to the booth there with the fact that they lost lost Dale Jr. But a lot of people kind of felt like maybe losing Dale Jr. wasn't necessarily bad. I mean, he's a huge part of that broadcast and a very popular guy in that broadcast booth. But a lot of people felt like maybe they had too many people talking and a lot of people repeating the same stuff on NBC. And so maybe losing one person wouldn't be a bad thing. They thought it would give a chance for some of the other people to be highlighted, if you will. I'm super excited, though, for Dale Jr. going over to Amazon and being part of that. As you know, they're going to host 10 races during the summer part of the season. And they're going to be exclusive in next season. I think they're exclusively covering the practices and the qualifying. So if we want to watch practice and qualifying, that's where it's going to be available. And I'm sure Dale Jr. is going to be a part of that. So that's going to be hugely popular as well.
Yeah, I agree. And I think you make a fair point there. I think maybe it is one person too many in the NBC booth. I think three is kind of the magic number for people in the booth. And I think, yeah, so to be seen if they replace Dale Jr. or go with a three-man booth or three-person booth. Coming up for the races later this season. But, yeah, it sounds like Rick Allen will be replaced by Lee Diffie for Cup races, but Allen will still do all of the Xfinity races for NBC's portion of the schedule in 2024.
Yes. Okay, so thank you for that clarification. Let's go ahead and look at the fantasy picks. I should have thought of this earlier. I don't know why I didn't. But let's look at the fantasy picks for the Craftsman Truck Series and the Cup Series, because we didn't do that during our preview, and we've been doing that, and I kind of enjoy that segment of the show. For Bristol Motor Speedway, as far as the box scores go, we've got Christian Eckes at the top of that list with three other drivers all over 100. Christian Eckes got the highest driver rating at 123.2. He's also got the best average finish at 4.9, so he's a good, solid pick. Ty Majeski, Grant Infinger, and Corey Heim all have ratings over the 100 mark. Ty Majeski and Grant Infinger are pretty close, 109.9 for Infinger, 109.9 for Majeski, 109.3 for Infinger, and Corey Heim comes in at 108.8. So they're all pretty close. But they don't come close to Christian Eckes' average finishing position. Or actually, they do. The average finishing position, Eckes comes in at 5.0. I was looking at average position. Eckes comes in at 5.0, which is decent. But Grant Infinger comes in at 3.5, and Corey Heim comes in at 5.5 compared to Ty Majeski at 10.0. So that's what I have from the stats perspective. What do you have from DraftKings?
Yeah, and I agree. Second, you know, I do enjoy the fantasy portion of the show, so I'm definitely glad we're given a chance to do that. Probably coming as no surprise, Kyle Busch is a very, very heavy favorite, and that number 7 Spire Motorsports Chevrolet coming in on DraftKings Sportsbook as of this morning at +125. As Sharon mentioned, Christian Eckes has some good numbers there, and that comes no surprise that he's at +500 or 5-1, and the second best odds to go to victory lane at Bristol Motor Speedway, Corey Heim's at +650, and Ty Majeski is at +700. So the sportsbook thinks those four had their best shot of getting a win this weekend. Grant Enfinger, Sharon's pick for the week, he's at 11-1. Zane Smith, my pick for the week, is at 14-1, along with Tyler Ankrum and the last winner in the NASCAR Craftsman Truck Series, Raja Karuth, is at 16-1, and his fellow Drive for Diversity program driver and graduate is Nick Sanchez, and he's at plus 1,800 or 18-1. And Ben Rhodes, former NASCAR Craftsman Truck Series champion, is at 22-1. So those are kind of the favorites there. I know Crafton's kind of struggled lately, but he's at 55-1 odds. I feel like that's crazy for him. I mean, he's a veteran and definitely always has a shot to potentially win at Bristol. So I might have to put a little bit of money on him at 55-1. A lot of tough competition, and obviously it's hard to beat Kyle Busch in a truck, but I don't know. I like the grizzled veterans in a track like Bristol.
Okay. It's hard to bet against Kyle Busch, though, at Bristol. As you say, he's the winningest driver at that track. He's going for 9 this weekend to join an elite group of drivers. But we didn't have that option. We didn't have that luxury of picking him because he was an early pick. So we had to make do with the rest of the best of the rest.
It's a fair way to say it.
Okay. Let's go ahead and look at the Cup Series now and the box scores for those drivers. The top of the list here is Christopher Bell. He's at 132. Out of 150, he's at 132.8. He's got a good average finishing position. It's not the best, though. He actually ties with another driver, but his best finish, average finish position is 3.4. Then we go to Chris Buescher at 118.7. He's actually got the best average finishing position out of two races, and all these drivers are at two races at Bristol. Again, another indication that we're transitioning to a new generation here. But Buescher's average finish position is at 2.5. Then we go to one of the veterans, Denny Hamlin. He's got a 5.0 average finish position. His driver rating is at 114.8. And Kyle Larson, average finishing position, tied with Christopher Bell at 3.5, but his driver rating is at 113.3. So some interesting stats there. There's a couple of other drivers here that have good average finishing positions, but box scores under 100, and that would be Chase Elliott at 4.5, and Michael McDowell actually has an average finish at 8.5, so he might be an underdog there. What do you have for us from DraftKings?
Yeah, so DraftKings odds as of this morning, probably no surprise, but the favorites, it's a tie between Kyle Larson and Christopher Bell, both at 5-1, and as we've seen so far based on 2024 performance, those probably make a lot. Those do make a lot of sense as being the heavy favorites. Not very far behind them is Denny Hamlin at plus 550 or 5.5-1, and then a little bit ways back, William Byron and Ryan Blaney, along with Kyle Busch. All three of those drivers are currently at 11-1 odds to go to victory lane at Bristol Motor Speedway. Tyler Reddick and Ty Gibbs, a pair of Toyota Racing drivers, are both at 12-1, along with Chris Buescher at 12-1. And Chase Elliott, who I feel like hasn't been to victory lane in forever, is back at 14-1, along with Brad Keselowski. Truex at 18-1, Chastain and Logano both at 20-1. Logano also has that 30-plus race winless streak, and as we mentioned earlier, Meyer back in 30th in the points, so he's looking to hopefully right the ship a little bit this weekend with a strong performance at Bristol.
Okay. Ryan Blaney kind of surprises me a little bit because his driver rating at Bristol is at 59.6, and his average finish at that track is 26.0. Now, we know Ryan Blaney's good, and he's done exceptionally well with being the defending champion. So sometimes the stats can be a little bit deceiving. So it'll be interesting to see what happens there.
Yeah, and I wish, like we got, you know, at Phoenix with the revised package, we got more practice time, and I think that was great. I wish they'd kind of go back to a little bit more of that. I think a couple of things. I think, number one, it provides those of us that do like to play fantasy or place bets on the race a little bit of data to work with. And I think from a storyline perspective, it kind of helps generate at least some storylines heading into the weekend. Drivers have a little bit more commentary or feedback, I feel like, after a practice session. So I'd like to see them hopefully maybe go back to some a little bit more practice in the future. Obviously, we're never going to be back to a day where they practice three or four times. They practice Friday, Saturday, and Sunday on a race weekend. I don't think we ever go back there, nor do I think they should. But a little bit longer practice session in each and every track, I think, especially at the Xfinity and truck level, I think is just necessary. But I can't imagine being a driver and you're getting, one of your first starts at Bristol Motor Speedway in a truck and you only get that short little practice and qualifying session before heading out there to race. It's got to be pretty damn intimidating to do that.
Absolutely. But I do think that NASCAR is going to bring back the practice, very similar to you. I think that we will see more practices. I don't know if it'll happen this year or not, but I do think by 2025, I do feel like we're going to have practice and qualifying back on TV. Like I said, Amazon's picking that up exclusively over there, so Prime Video is going to have the practice and qualifying, but I agree with you. I don't think it's going to be like we have had in the past, which was probably over the mark, if you will, too much, and I think they're going to find that happy medium between no practice and having some kind of practice and having that available for fans to watch. And you're right. Those of us that like to get real serious about who our pick is for the weekend, we like to watch those kind of things and see how things are playing out. So, and a lot of times when we make our picks, we don't have the advantage of having that information available to us.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Sometimes we're trying to get our picks in so early in the week just because we've got to go through and cycle through, eight or nine different people. And I know I'm notorious for always forgetting when it's my turn. So, as always, kudos to Jay and even yourself that kind of help keep that move along and give us gentle nudges and reminders. Or I don't think we'd ever all get our picks in. And some weeks it's great. Some weeks we're all picked by like a Tuesday. And sometimes we're like 5 minutes from the green flag and we're trying to get our last picks in. But yeah, sometimes I'm like, oh shoot, it's my turn to pick already. I don't have any data, odds or not. I don't have a whole lot to look at. I haven't looked at anything yet. And I'll just kind of make a blind, semi-educated guess.
Yeah, sometimes it is like that. So anyway, I have a lot of fun with it though. And to me, it gives me a different perspective. When I pull up my NASCAR app, I always put in all of the picks from the drive from our team, so that I can see where my driver is performing compared to everybody else's pick for the weekend.
Ooh, that's fun. I like that idea. I've never really done that. I've sometimes, highlighted just some drivers that maybe I'm watching and I have my fantasy lineups, but I kind of like that. Maybe I'll give that a shot this week.
Okay, I think that's kind of a fun way to do it. I'm already like, okay, who do I have to pass now to in order to move up in my point standings here? So it makes it fun. Okay, we got that done. What else? We kind of find ourselves with some extra time here this week. Brian?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't have a whole else lot. I'm trying to think. Normally we have, Mike or somebody that's going to be fired up about something. I don't think any of us are fired up about anything this week yet. Anyway, it's still early. We still got some time before we get to the weekend. But I'm hoping we're going to see a couple of just great races back-to-back for the Trucks and Cup. And everyone will be like, yep, Bristol back on concrete was the right call.
Yeah, so I hope we're saying that at the end of this. I will say I did see here Kamui Kobayashi is going to make a second start for 23-11 racing at Circuit of the Americas. That was announced on Wednesday for the Cup Series. So that's kind of cool. I always like it when we have drivers from other countries take part in what we're doing here with our racing. So really fun to see that.
Yeah, it's great international exposure, and it's always just great to hear their different perspectives and takes, especially I feel like saw a lot of that last year with, Shane, and we had, Button Run, at least a couple of road course or street course races last year in the Cup Series, as you mentioned, Kobayashi or whatever, and I think this is great to see it. He'll be in a
2311 car, so quality TRD equipment and quality teammates, and a guy like Hamlin and as his team owner. So I think that's awesome, and I think we'll, you know, continue to see some more driver announcements like that as we get closer to the other road course and the Chicago Street Course race coming up this summer. So excited to see that, like the international flavor, and always interesting to hear their media availabilities and just their different perspectives on, you know, what the Cup Series and racing in America is like versus, you know, whatever series that they've been running in.
Okay. Thought maybe I'd take a look at the Goodyear tire notes for this weekend. The Spring Bristol race is back on concrete this year after 3 years of running on dirt. We've kind of talked about that. As the sport continues to make adjustments with the next-gen car, Goodyear is taking a step at Bristol last September to introduce more wear and get more lap time fall off, turning a tire setup to a relatively smooth concrete track surface is a difficult challenge. So designing a tire with more fall off improves the racing by increasing passing and bringing tire management into play, as drivers that are easier on their tires early in the run will gain track position later in the run. So here's some notes. Cup returns to Bristol with their 23 tire setup, being on 18-inch bead diameter tires. The Cup teams will run a different tire setup than those in the Craftsman Truck Series at Bristol this weekend. This is the same left-side tire code that Cup teams have run on Bristol concrete since September of 2022. The right-side tire code was added to the Bristol setup last September. While the right-side tire code is unique to Bristol, Cup teams are scheduled to run the left-side code at Dover in April. With this 18-inch tire, its lower profile sidewall, NASCAR Cup cars do not run inner liners in any of their tires. They're also bringing wet tires to Bristol for the first time. Goodyear will bring the 18-inch wet tire radial tires for Bristol to the Cup cars should NASCAR determine that conditions warrant. NASCAR held a test with Cup cars at Bristol on February 8th. To assess the feasibility of running in wet conditions at the fast high bank short track. Cup teams will have a maximum of 4 sets of wet tires for the event. I don't know if they'll need them this weekend, but they are prepared for that is the point here. They last ran a wet weather tire in competition at the Chicago Street Course race in July, and last ran on a short track at the All-Star Race in North Wilkesboro last May. In addition to the obvious difference of the tread pattern versus Goodyear's dry weather slick tires, the Goodyear and Eagle lettering on the sidewalls of the wet tires is white and not the standard yellow. So something to keep in mind there. Truck Series is going to use the Goodyear Tire 15-inch Speedway radials. They'll have 5 sets for the event. The left side will have the D6106 code, while the right side has the D6132. The tire circumference on the left side is 87.60 inches, while the right side has 88.58 inches. The minimum recommended inflation, and this is where a lot of times teams will play around, and if they don't get it right, it ends up in flat tires. It's best to stay inside the recommendations most times. They'll have a 20 PSI on the left rear, 18 PSI for the right front, and 45 PSI for the right rear, and 40 PSI on the left, I guess. So trucks return to Bristol for the third time on this tire setup, being on a 15-inch bead tire. The series teams will run a different tire setup than those ran in the Cup Series, as we mentioned earlier. And they're also bringing wet tires, I guess, for the truck series. So for the Cup Series, they're running the Goodyear Eagle 18-inch Speedway radials. They have 1 set for practice, 1 set for qualifying, and 10 sets for the race. 9 race sets plus 1 transferred from qualifying. Their left side code is D5170 versus the right side, which is at D5206. The tire circumference on the left side is 88.78 inches, the right side 89.61 inches. The minimum inflation, the left front is 16 PSI, left rear 18 PSI. The right front is 46 PSI, with the right rear being at 44 PSI. So again, sometimes drivers will run a lower PSI on their tires at some of these tracks because it helps them get grip. And but when they go outside the recommended PSI, sometimes going with that lower PSI will end up in a flat tire too. Any thoughts about the race package for tires this weekend?
No, I think kind of like you mentioned, it's always kind of that fine line between, you know, manipulating air pressure to a level that gives the best performance, but not too far where it's going to cause a tire blowout or any issues with, you know, not being at what Goodyear recommends as their minimum standards. I'm still a little bit like curious about, you know, the wet weather tire that they could run on short tracks. Obviously not if it's raining itself, but if the track is still a little bit damp, I think the point being there, they don't have to get the track completely dry before they race. I don't know how that would perform or if that would turn into a mess if it happened, but not necessarily looking forward to that happen, but very curious to see if, you know, that works to where they intend if they do get a chance to use that at any point. Hopefully not this weekend. It looks like the forecast seems pretty favorable for Bristol, with like a 5% chance of rain on Saturday for the trucks and cup qualifying, and 10% chance on Sunday for the cup race. So should be able to at least get those races in and be good to go.
Yeah, I agree with you, Brian. I like that they're bringing a wet package just in case, but it could end up being kind of an interesting, a different version of race that we get when if they're racing in the wet tire. And I'm glad that the forecast shows us that they may not even need them this year. So I think that's good. I'm glad that NASCAR is prepared, but I hope we don't use them. Okay, anything else that you can think of? I've been, like, digging here trying to get more for us to talk about, but I think we might have come to the end.
Yeah, I think so. I think I'm good. Just really looking forward to a fun weekend of racing at Bristol this week.
Yeah, me too. Bristol always gives us a good show, and I think this weekend is going to be no exception. I hope the drivers and everybody enjoy the race. In the past, I know drivers really love racing at Bristol. I think they're happy to be back on the concrete. And just like the fans, I think they're happy about going back to our traditional Bristol spring race. And it's going to be a lot of fun to watch those two races, both the Truck Series as well as the Cup Series this weekend. So, well, I've got a feeling we might have a lot to talk about on Monday, though, in Hot Topics. So we'll see how that goes.
For sure.
Sometimes has people being upset with one another. So
yeah,
we'll see how it goes.
Very well could.
So, okay, with that, Brian, let's go ahead and call it a wrap early tonight or today's episode. And we'll catch everybody on the other side of the weekend.
Sounds good. Thanks for having me on. Another fun show, and everyone enjoy your weekend, and hopefully enjoy some motorsports wherever you are.
Absolutely. See you on the other side, guys.
Have a good one.